think she's...
It's a new thing.
She thinks she's being clever, but I knew.
I am being clever. I'm always being clever. I'm like a sea lion.
Are you always being clever?
Yeah, mostly in terms of, like, inflatable beach balls.
Yeah, but that's still pretty clever. I can't do that. Can you balance a beach ball on your nose? No.
Imagine if, like, the way that we measured the academic development of children was by their ability with inflatable beach balls.
Yeah, that's actually...
Oh, when I was seven, I had an inflatable beach ball age of 19.
Yeah, this is how I got into university.
That's right. You walk into an Oxford interview, they just throw an inflatable beach ball at you.
Yeah.
I don't know why we've appended the word inflatable, to be honest. That's just a beach ball.
Because I didn't want to just say balls, right? Because then it sounds like a double entendre. So I was doing that little bit more extra specificity. But I could have just said beach ball.
And the last thing we want is a double entendre.
No, on this show, absolutely not.
Absolutely.
We only like single entendre.
Yeah. Like a double entendre is really for the polyamorous amongst us.
Look, if I make a comment on this show, I like it to etre entendu almost immediately. And if that is not the case, then that's a problem for me. This is a fast moving audio format. I don't have time for people considering more than one entendre. Who do you think this is? Fucking Radio 4, we've got content to get through.
The thing is, the people think that you can have double entendres on...
That was entendre bad.
Entendre. Yeah, we got that. They think they can have them on UK podcasts, but it's because people watch too much American TV. Mm. So actually, they only exist in the US court system and not here.
I'm pleading the second entendre.
Law and Order special puns unit.
I am going to kill you. Yeah. Like, well, it was a double entendre, Your Honor.
Because in America, double entendre means that you can't make the same euphemistic joke twice.
A husband and a wife can't be tried for the same crime. That's otherwise it's double entendre.
Yeah, exactly. They can't be tried for the same joke.
Now that's a good bit of guy. Just confuses every single term.
Yeah, I'd like to plead double indemnity.
Yeah.
A husband and wife can be tried for the same crime. That's the bit from Arrested Development.
It used to be that you couldn't compel a spouse to testify against their other spouse, and then they changed that.
I thought that was still the case.
No, not in Scotland. I think 2008, spouse is not a compellable witness anymore.
But that's like...
That's why all these guys are getting divorced now. There's nothing in it anymore.
Surprisingly late.
Yeah.
I think.
Marriage used to mean something in this country. Now it's gone to the dogs.
No, it used to be the case that you could choose to testify against your spouse, but they couldn't make
they
you.
Couldn't make
they couldn't like make you take the stand, and now they can.
Just one more attack on the sanctity of marriage. Mm.
Being married used to be like the mafia. Like, it used to be like, look.
This thing of ours.
One rule is you don't be a fucking rat.
What is the mafia if not a polycule?
If I tell you something within the confines of the marital bed, don't be telling no fucking feds. What am I? Some kind of mook?
Listener, I have to tell you that Milo is doing what I can only describe as mafia hands.
He is doing mafia hands. He is, yeah. I'm trying to deal with it like how you deal with a toddler throwing a tantrum. Like,
I got
don't
a wedding ring
it.
On each finger because I'm married to all the fellas.
Don't look at it. Don't acknowledge it.
Yeah, I'm not helping with that. I keep cracking up.
In the mafia, we're all married to each other. That's why we kiss each other on the lips. Maroon, they can't make us testify. You know why the mafia can't pay for gay marriage?
Being
get out
gay.
Of Rico.
Being gay so nobody can implicate you. Yeah, before I finish robbing this bank, I gotta kiss each and every one of the witnesses on the lips.
Then they can't testify. Yeah. Your Honor, I think you'll find that the witness is gay. They're just like rolling back the tape and they're like, ah, yes, his evidence is inadmissible due to a strange homophobic law. It's like, well, even if you did kiss him under duress, I'm afraid it still counts.
welcome to Masters of Our Domain.
Oh, God, Phoebe's had to intervene. It's like when the driving instructor hits the brake, like the dual control.
Yeah,
we do have the dual mics.
Yeah.
I've been tapping my clipboard impatiently against the dashboard for the last 10 minutes. Right.
Yeah. I muddle my way through a podcasting parallel part.
Welcome to a podcast even less about Seinfeld than usual.
Yeah. I'm Marlon Edwards, someone who's never seen Seinfeld, and I'm joined as ever by someone you've already heard from.
Was that yes?
Yeah. It's
yeah.
Phoebe.
No, he's not. He's not going to say
my name. No, he's
going
to jump on your intro. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Well, I'm also joined by someone you have also already heard from. If you listen to this show, we are joined by someone who once again I will introduce formally, despite it being weird
please.
Given the amount that we work together. It's Alice Caldwell Kelly.
Thank you. Pleased to be here.
Alice, welcome.
Thank you.
It is Movie Corner.
On the bonus feed. Phoebe's movie. I love that you've composed a movie corner theme tune in my absence.
I've been doing this for the last 2 hours.
have I just been blocking it out?
Yeah. In fact, okay. I've also left you voice notes, which is just me singing Movie Corner.
This I fully don't remember. Is this some kind of like Shutter Island situation that I'm in here?
It's like the polar opposite of your trigger phrase. Mm. Like this is how I like kind of blank all your memories.
Yeah, I'm being deactivated.
Yeah. you've assassinated like at least 3 world leaders in the last few weeks, and you don't know about
it.
You don't know about
Milo, like painstakingly reassembling a sniper rifle and putting it back into a briefcase, and you're just like, movie corner.
Yeah, during my time in the gay mafia, I had to assassinate a lot of world leaders.
Because, you know, good guys dress in black.
That is right.
Remember that. In case you've come face to face and make contact.
Yeah, the gay mafia meet at Berghain. It's gonna be a long episode, folks.
Oh yeah.
So it's Movie Corner, as you might have guessed from Phoebe's mellifluous theme tune stylings. This month we've decided to subject Alice to the seminal movie of the year 2000, the very first year of the new millennium, What Women Want, starring Mel Gibson and Helen Hunt. Don't say that in a hurry.
If 9/11 had not happened, every movie would be like this today.
I know. It's such a time capsule of a film.
Yeah.
It's a better time, a simpler time.
I like the idea of 9/11 as a kind of culturally disrupting force.
Have you ever seen that photo of the billboard for Mariah Carey's film Glitter with the Twin Towers burning behind it? Because that's peak 2000 hauntology.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
sorry,
yeah,
for
yeah.
a second, I thought you meant that the burning Twin Towers were in the poster.
No,
Mariah Carey confessing to doing 9/11.
No, she did get into a lot of trouble for claiming that her poor box office showing was that it was released on September the 11th.
In fairness, would you see 9/11 happening and then go, well, I'm going to go and see a Mariah Carey movie?
I don't know, it might cheer you up.
Everyone on each of those planes were flying to New York specifically to see that movie, and it really hurt the opening weekend.
Well, there was this one guy, right, who bowled a perfect game.
Yeah.
On 9/11.
I love that guy.
Because the first plane like hit the tower like 9 in the morning, right? He must have done it afterwards. Mm. If that guy had been into Mariah Carey instead of bowling, then who knows what kind of cultural situation we'd be in right
now. That's a real sliding doors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that actually a lot of people were going to go and see Mariah Carey's film Glitter on 9/11, but a lot of them got an email instructing them not to go to the movie theater that day. The big movie theater at the top of the Twin Towers.
It was the original Tower 7 was the big cinema in Times Square.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's right. I like the idea that they did 9/11 because the hijackers really hated the film What Women Want, and they were like, we need to strike a blow at the heart of the serpent.
This is what Saeed Qutb warned us about. This is like the decadent West at its finest extent, is the movie What Women Want.
This is the thing, people always think that when they say the great Satan, they always think they're talking about America. They're not, they're talking about Nancy Myers.
That's right. To be fair, if there's one thing the average Al-Qaeda terrorist doesn't want to hear, it's women's thoughts. It's a bit of a toxic sort of masculine environment, really, Al-Qaeda. I think if they had a softer feminine touch, it would be a very different organization.
They've been making a lot of changes and effort in that regard, and I really think it's very unfair of you to be erasing that.
Yeah, boss Taliban.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so What Women Want caused 9/11?
Yeah, yes. That's right. That is correct. That is canon.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Or did Nancy Myers cause 9/11?
Yeah, Mel Gibson's character in this movie also dies in 9/11, I'm pretty sure.
Look, there is absolutely... We will get on to
this. It was only halfway through the film that I worked out that it was supposed to be in Chicago. I just assumed it was supposed to be in New York the whole time.
Yeah, me too.
So did I.
It's a throwaway line halfway through the film where they're like, oh, what do you think you are? The biggest guy in Chicago or something?
Where we live.
It's like one of those things like when they're kind of commissioning kind of BBC comedy dramas and they're just like, look, got to make things less London-centric, so let's just like set it in Manchester. And then they have absolutely no scenes of Manchester and everything is just filmed indoors, so it could be fucking anywhere.
Yeah, that's right.
And all of the actors have Southern accents.
Mm. Yeah, there's no skyline.
Really
there's
like establishing Oasis. Remember the Hacienda? This luxury flat is above where it used to be.
Yeah, quite. Yeah, so it's supposed to be Chicago.
A lot of people who live in central Manchester are
I was gonna say this is tracking so far.
Yeah,
it's interesting because obviously we will get onto this in more detail, but normally in the magic realism romantic comedy genre, which is a surprisingly large genre, and
this is kind of like Garcia Marquez stuff.
Yeah,
really,
and it got killed by 9/11, and I think that's one of the worst things about it. Frankly. Yeah.
So when Mel Gibson meets a magical gypsy called Melquiades, who
although is 17 again post 9/11, I think it is.
Ooh,
because 17 again is the best.
Yeah, but I think you're right that 9/11
Why would
like
you want
really
to be 17 again so you can nonce yourself.
I think 9/11 really knocked the wind out of the sails of the like magical realism rom-com.
Yeah, and that's sad. That's sad as shit.
9/11 kind of was magical realism.
You know what else it killed? It killed the teen movie, now that I think about it.
Ah, yeah. This is interesting, and we're going to come back to this because you are completely right. Because after that, teen films only became like song and dance extravaganzas.
So it basically killed the
high school comedy. That's true.
Ferris Bueller died on 9/11. a second Ferrari struck the Twin Towers.
The one time,
are you telling me
the one time that Ferris Bueller was conscientious.
Yeah. Ferris Bueller got an email telling him not to go to school that day.
That's why there was never a Ferris Bueller 2.
Ferris Bueller, like, it's like the tragic sequel where he's like in a drudging office job in the Twin Towers and it's September the 11th, 2001. And as the plane is barreling towards the building, he just realizes he's wasted his life.
I've just remembered that Mean Girls is post 9/11, so ignore my
2004 Mean Girls, I believe. Yeah.
That's right.
But it does exist.
I feel like Cameron could have joined ISIS.
Oh, yeah. That kid's waiting to be radicalized.
The bit where he like beats himself up in the car. Yeah, 100%. 100%.
There's a fan theory that
Cameron's imagining Ferris Bueller.
Ferris Bueller's day off.
Ferris Bueller's day off or a fan theory of ISIS?
Well, both.
Yeah. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is actually Jihadi John's dad.
Yeah, I actually ship these two ISIS guys.
Yeah, it's a kind of Fight Club sort of Fight Club origin story.
Yeah, like Tyler Durden.
Yeah. Ferris Bueller is Cameron's.
The first rule is Cameron's you don't talk about ISIS except in the videos. It's quite a lot.
Issuing their social media guidelines.
ISIS have a style guide.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be good. Yeah. I'd respect that if they did.
Well, you know, they're strategic thinkers.
God, good Lord, we're 18 minutes in and we have barely discussed.
Yeah. So in magical realism rom-coms, there's always like something that happens. So like in The Hot Chick, it's the earrings. In the various iterations of Freaky Friday, it's like making a wish like on a kind of storm, on like a kind of stormy night. In 17 again, he meets a kind of kindly janitor who's strongly suggested to be like Santa Claus or something, because he's got kind of a white beard and he's very jolly. And there's something about the...
Yeah, he's supposed to be the Prophet Muhammad.
The water going... What? Oh, well, that's...
Yeah, where's a lot of green? It's supposed to be Al-Hidra.
And the water going one way or the water going another, like something like that. But they don't make any effort to explain how Mel Gibson... What's the character's name? Nick.
Nick Marshall?
Marshall. How Nick Marshall comes to hit, like...
It's electricity-based. He gets tased.
Yeah, sort of, but like...
He does a self-tase.
Spoiler coming. How he comes to hear women's thoughts. And I think that there's absolutely no proof whatsoever.
Space for a Jerry Seinfeld bit, where I was just like, why do you need to get electrocuted? They just tell you. I wish I didn't hear him. Which is actually another crux point of the film.
Yeah. There's absolutely no proof whatsoever that he has not been knocked into a kind of vividly hallucinating coma.
The kind of life on Mars situation.
Yeah. Fan theory. Yeah.
Exactly. There's actually no proof whatsoever that that's not what's supposed to have happened. Because he gets woken up by his daughter.
Life on Mars, but it's a guy from advertising who goes back to the 70s and he's like, this is great. I can smoke indoors. Awesome.
He smokes indoors in this.
There's so much smoking in this movie.
Yeah. It feels like, honestly, like it feels like weird. It feels like off key.
Yeah.
That he smokes. Although as his character gets better and nicer, he smokes less.
I'm willing to buy into this fan theory that he just dies in the first electrocution because the arc of this movie is like purgatory, right? He expiates his sins of being the worst dipshit in the world and he becomes a better man and then is, I guess, granted access to heaven and or Helen Pussy. Hunt's apartment.
Yeah.
Pussy apartment.
That's right.
Pussy apartment.
Yeah.
Heaven Hunt.
All men want is that...
Women do be storing the pussy in the apartment. That is true.
They do. That's where they keep it. So if you're looking for it... The thing is, a lot of men, they think they can't find the clitoris, but really they haven't even found the pussy.
You even look in her apartment, bro. Yeah.
That might be between her legs, but it's not the pussy.
I'm just looking for pussy. Well, you're looking in the wrong place.
You got to go to
romantic apartment. Comedy, searching for pussy in all the wrong places.
Got to open the safe. So by way of introduction...
Samuel Beckett's waiting for pussy.
A line from the Wikipedia. The film earned mixed reviews from critics, but was a box office success with a North American domestic gross of $182 million and a worldwide gross of $374 million against a budget of $70 million.
Well, that's because people are hogs and they loved it.
You could
did better than Mariah Carey's Glitter.
You could fund a lot of terrorist attacks with that.
Yeah, you could. And they did.
Just like those like home taping is funding terrorism ads, but it's Mel Gibson's What Women Want is funding Hamas.
Nancy Myers is single-handedly funding the Mujahideen.
The last thing they would expect. Anyone was going to fund Hamas, it might be Mel Gibson.
I just thought it was weird that this film opened with a dedication to the noble Mujahideen fighters in Afghanistan.
Yeah, it seemed tonally off, I agree.
Yeah. And if you want to know what terrorism it did fund, A loose remake, What Men Want, was released in 2019, starring Taraji P. Henson and Aldis Hodge. Two people I've never heard of in my life. I presume that was made by Netflix for a budget of like $3 million.
Taraji P. Henson, isn't that a Cookie from Empire?
Yeah, and Aldis Hodge was on Leverage, so this is like going to be some Tyler Perry shit.
Both of you have just said words there.
Empire was that TV show about the family, like the kind of pseudo crime family who own a record company.
I guarantee you this is directed by Tyler Perry, right?
It had to be. Jesse Smollett in and was written by Jonathan from Buffy.
I'm on the Wikipedia of What Men Want. You've made me do this.
Yeah, and it's going to be a Tyler Perry movie.
A Tyler Perry joint.
The Wikipedia is still loading.
I believe he prefers his films to be called.
What?
As is my understanding.
Well,
after Tyler publicly corrected me.
Yeah. While that's happening, on the poster...
I got called out by Tyler Perry. That's what happened.
On the poster, there's two taglines. You've got a picture of Mel Gibson and Helen Hunt sort of nuzzling each other and smiling, which is kind of a spoiler because, like, that very much is something that only happens right at the end of the film. And, like, they're very much... They are antagonists for, like, much of the film. So it's weird to put that on the poster.
But she's the love interest.
She is the love interest, but she's also the antagonist.
If you know anything about romantic comedies, though, like... When they introduce the other female character, he's not going to get together with just like some other bitch.
Marissa Tomei. So Marissa Tomei is some other bitch in this movie. That
is
her role.
And like, honestly, like I stand against this. Like, how dare you cast Marissa Tomei, the most beautiful woman in the world, as some other bitch?
This is Rachel Weisz erasure, but yes.
Okay, fine. I stand. Called out by Alice.
What Men Want was directed by Adam Shankman.
Who is Adam Shankman?
I do not know. The screenplay was written by Jazz Waters and Tina Gordon Chisholm. Chisholm, there's a name for you.
There you go.
A gaping Chisholm.
Goodness me. I thought you were going to go with Chisholm as the wordplay. But no.
There you go.
On
the poster of the film, Mel Gibson grinning, Helen Hunt sort of nuzzling him. They got their names. They got What Women Want is on there. And then it has two taglines. Not one, but two. So the first one is, he has the power to hear everything women are thinking. A little on the nose, I think. It's like you read the tagline, you don't really need to see the film.
That was actually the title of the film in Uzbekistan.
And then the second tagline is more of a shitpost, which is just, finally, a man is listening. Men.
I'm always saying this.
Am I right, ladies?
This is why I think it sucks that people think that reading Atlas Shrugged is such a red flag, because I think it's good when men shrug instead of acting like they know it all.
That is right. Yeah. That is true.
Atlas Shrugged, a book about men knowing their place.
Oh, why can't men admit
when they don't know?
Actually, why can't a woman hold up the earth? You know, I think it's been a bloke for long enough.
Yeah, why can't it be At Lady Shrugged? Yeah.
Are they
at last?
At last, yeah, two S's.
That's way better.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Right.
What would you have as the tagline to What Women Want? Because I think it would be much funner if it just said dick, just like, but massive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the quest for pussy.
Yeah, pussy got me acting psychic.
Yeah. Women got me acting unwise. Yeah, I just want to see her apartment.
There are two kinds of pussy in the world. There's apartment pussy and there's park pussy.
Yeah. Yo, you're getting that leasehold pussy.
You don't go near park pussy. You don't stick your dick in park.
Park pussy.
Just working up my Dice Clay character.
Just a whole property market full of pussy. Like the semi-detached versus the detached versus the row house pussy.
That's right.
The rent-to-own pussy.
Yeah, bedsit pussy, HMO pussy.
The gentrified pussy. Yeah. That's in Crown Heights.
Everyone is telling me that it's better to get the apartment pussy, but I'm stuck with this communal pussy. No good. I'm just going to start reading the plot summary and we can just jump in whenever.
And jump in.
The plot summary, it does that classic thing that Wikipedia plot summaries often do, which is they include details in the plot summary which you just either do not find out in the film at all, or which are like not clear at that point in the film. So here's the first sentence. Nick Marshall, a Chicago advertising executive. Again, not something that is made clear.
It's the fact
that it's in Chicago. It's sort of heavily implied that it's in New York.
They don't even do like the aerial shot of Chicago, which I believe is I believe is a requirement.
It may as well have been set in fucking Gotham. You know, it's just East Coast City.
Yeah. And also, and because it's a big advertising company, you just assume New York because that's where they are.
Yeah.
So it's odd from the outset in that respect.
You don't associate Chicago with advertising.
No.
I associate it with pizza.
Yeah, weird pizza.
Yeah.
Fucked up pizza.
Yeah, weird, like, fat pizza.
Mm.
Hot dogs. Yeah. Like, insane Polish dudes.
Insane cops. Insane Polish cops.
Insane Polish cops.
Very, very tall women in fishnets.
Yeah.
In prison.
And it says that Nick...
Oh yeah,
the musical.
That took me a second. I'm very stupid.
Do you want to know an interesting fact about the core? Is it a corps de ballet? If it's a musical, I'm not sure it is. The chorus dancers, the ones who are like not the main dancers, they are routinely danced by male dancers because female dancers aren't tall enough. And they want, and there's also like quite
hire more trans women. Look, we need somebody who's going to be really feminine, but you've got to be like six foot or more. I wonder where we could find these people.
I found this out like I don't know. I think the way this works out, like 20
more
years ago,
that, people get into the dancing in Chicago and discover they're trans that way. Oh well, one try couldn't hurt.
Transed by Chicago.
That's
fair enough, I think. But you know, I found this out like kind of like 20 years ago when I was going to a dance class, and the and the studio next door had been rented by Chicago, and the core dancer lads were in there rehearsing, and they were just like wearing just like their sweats and heels.
Oh wow!
And our teacher said, Do you want to know an interesting fact about the chorus of Chicago? It's routinely danced by men.
Be very useful if you go on a podcast involving the movie Chicago.
Yeah, the musical Chicago is run by the gay mafia. You want to understand something?
Chicago's fucking great.
Yeah, we had to make this chorus line gay so they couldn't test it.
I used to have a DVD of Chicago, which was stolen by one of my former flatmates' one night stands.
That's very men.
At least that's like good taste in theft. He didn't
steal anything else.
He just stole
my DVD of Chicago.
I stole it because it was cool.
I stole it because I support trans women.
it's to do with their there are much more even heights amongst male dancers. And presumably amongst trans women dancers as well.
Yeah.
But they also want there to be like a kind of significant difference in height between the main characters and the chorus. So welcome to the musical theatre podcast.
Musical theatre corner.
Musical theatre.
That's way too understated for musical theatre.
If you're about to say jazz hands, do not fucking say it.
It's a podcast, a podcast, a podcast. Oh my God, it's a podcast. That would be the musical theatre podcast.
Okay, fine. Yeah, all right. And I'll allow that.
I fucking hate musical theatre. Chicago is good, though. I will allow. Chicago is sort of like an exception that proves the rule type scenario for me.
That's not true, but we're not going to get into this now.
No.
I just hate.
He's wrong, yes.
Yeah, men, right? Men. They're either like saying they don't like musical theatre or they're stealing your copy of Chicago. And only men do this.
Chicago is the one that proves the rule.
Men will literally steal your DVD of Chicago instead of going to therapy.
Right. So, but and then it says that Nick Marshall was raised by his Las Vegas showgirl mother. Again, something which does not come up.
No, it never comes up again.
No, it does. It does. It never comes up again, but for there's a brief montage of him being raised in Vegas, and it's like he's raised by
wolves. I don't remember this at all.
Like, this pack of roaming showgirls have, like, adopted him as their own.
I was on fucking edibles. Maybe I just missed that bit.
Yeah, but
like...
but what I think is weird about this bit is they do a kind of whole sort of, oh, so... is it any wonder his attitude to women is messed up? And it's like, as far as I can tell...
he was raised by women.
Like, as far as I can tell, like, they're supposed to suggest that his showgirl mother and her, like, kind of gaggle of showgirl harpies are supposed to be, like, very loving and present and actually, like, it's actually, like, a really nice circumstance for a kid to grow up.
Really nice if your mom and your mum's friends, if your mum's friends are too sexy, you grow up to be a misogynist. That's just a
sign. You grow up to be me. You grow up to love MILFs.
It seemed to be a strange... Like,
yeah,
it seemed to be like a strange account of like why he's grown up to be like such a prick.
Yeah,
like it doesn't.
Yeah, and this is his ex-wife talking to her friends about him. Like the first 20 minutes of the movie are like an experiment to see how hard you can fail the Bechdel test. It's just like a series of different women talking to each other about this guy and why
he
sucks.
Women have to think about something that's not a man. That's the what women want test. Mm. So the next sentence is, Nick is a chauvinist, which, and that's a blue link on Wikipedia, in case you wanted to click through for the rich history of chauvinism, skilled at selling products to men and seducing women. Okay, so this is another thing, right, that he's skilled at selling products to men because he's an advertising executive.
And that's his job.
Yeah. but also it is weird how they're constantly like, oh yeah, he's, every woman wants to shag him. He's like really good at seducing women, but also he doesn't understand them at all. And it's like, well, no, to have that effect on women, you do have to understand women somewhat. This is like based on like a 14-year-old boy's understanding of how men and women's relationships work.
Yeah, but you also find out that he does not fuck as well. So.
Oh yeah.
No.
Does he not?
He has to rely on being able to read the woman he's having sex with's mind.
Mm.
He's no good at it.
Oh.
And that freaks him out.
Mm. Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Marissa, the second most beautiful woman in the world. Mm, yeah. He's just like rummaging around, just like, look, I know I left it somewhere. Like, and she's just saying, I told you, there's a dish. Mm. Put it in the dish when you come in the house.
Gonna have to go to a locksmith to get a replacement. Yeah,
do you know how much he's gonna charge? Do you know how much an emergency pussy smith costs at this time of night?
Women put the pussy in a glass of dental disinfectant overnight.
Can we start calling your doctor your pussy smith?
Don't drink that. That's my pussy glass.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
Good. I'm glad we got that cleared up.
Yeah, you have written permission to do that.
Pussy smith.
The pussy monger.
You're locked out of your apartment and you're like, yeah, I'm going to need to get transed up.
Like, this is the thing. Like, is a pussy monger somebody who makes pussies or is it somebody who, like, dishes out the pussy?
Peddles pussy.
Yeah.
It would be like someone who, like, deals in pussies. Yeah.
Or is it someone who foments pussy? And, like, kind of stirs up pussy.
Trying to create pussy.
Yeah.
A general sense of pussy in the atmosphere. Yeah, there wasn't enough pussy, and then now.
See, what I've done is I've taken your perfectly ordinary movie corner episode, and I've introduced the fact that the word pussy is funny into it, and I'm afraid I have simply destroyed it. I'm so sorry.
Manga Bump and Zero.
Alice, we literally recorded 2 hours of conversation about Crocodile Dundee. You do not even know what you're dealing with here.
that crocodile Dundee pussy got me out of some wise.
Ever fucked a crocodile? No, it would have changed your life. He expects to get a promotion at the advertising firm Sloan Curtis, but his manager, Dan, instead announces that he's hiring Darcy McGuire to broaden the firm's appeal to women. This is an element of the film. I'm going to put my cards on the table. I really enjoyed this film. Like, against my better judgment, it is a rip-roaring romp of a film.
I enjoyed it so much. I think it's charming. I think it's fun. It's got a plot.
It's such a fucking, it's such a time capsule too, which was like, it takes all of the stuff that you would maybe roll your eyes at, and it just makes you go, oh, wasn't history fantastic? But, yeah. Like, there's fully a 10-minute period in this where it's like, I've got to hire women because broads.
Yeah.
It's,
do you it's know like the a women's world now. You're not now that speech that his boss gives is amazing.
You're not allowed to slap them on the ass anymore because we have to sell them stuff.
No, it's not even there yet. It's like you still can slap them on the ass, but now you have to include them in adverts.
But did you know that women...
You've got to start sexualizing women, but so that women buy stuff.
Listen here, 007, they're called women.
These days, women be shopping.
They do. The problem is, like, there are women who are born in the mid-80s who are buying things.
Women be shopping. That's literally, like, that should be the tagline.
We need to be determining where they're shopping.
Women be both shopping and thinking.
This is an element of the plot which I find hard to believe, which is that they're an entire advertising company that has never successfully advertised anything to women. Because, like, they've been advertising shit to women since, like, the 1920s. Like, this isn't, like, you know...
They're the based trad-pilled advertising agency. They don't want to advertise to women because that's gay. Right. All they do is, like, swimsuit ads, which...
But yeah, when they come up with the kind of the, oh, so here's, you know, here, like, I want you to come up with some, like, pictures for this stuff. Like, here's how we're, like, oh, it's like selling stuff to women. And it's exactly the same stuff that has always been sold to women. It's fucking like, it's lipstick. It's,
yeah, could you
like,
sell a bra
like,
to a woman?
It's like fucking waxing like home strips. Waxing stuff. And it's just like, I know what you're trying to say here, but also you did not invent women be shopping as a concept.
Selling bras to women was not, I think, something invented in the 80s.
I'm trying to sell bras to men because only men were allowed to buy things.
I think it is much better if we think about this film as a deliberate prequel of Mad Men.
I thought about Mad Men 2 watching
like,
this.
It's a companion.
But I thought about
Mad
it as like a sequel.
Oh, yeah, okay, fine. Yeah, no, it's more. Yeah, more of a sequel.
I thought of Mel Gibson in this as like a washed up Don Draper. He's just done all of the like finding himself shit and has come out of the other end as this kind of like aged guy who fucks a lot but isn't very good at it and has never sold anything to a woman in his life.
And he lives in the world's nicest apartment.
But he knows how to sell stuff to men, stuff that men like.
He
like,
does,
you know,
yeah. Like cigars,
using
other guys' dicks, that kind of thing.
Cigars!
Let's just say you're in a sauna with the fellas. Dicks, they're tasty.
Like
that's
a cigar.
A yeah. It's like a cigar but for your mouth. It's
what
like
is
a cold
what's
cigar.
A, what's a usual
in your
cigar
mouth.
For?
Put a cigar in your ass and suck off a guy. It's
now,
not being straight.
Now I've never
Cadillac.
I've never smoked a cigar.
It's like sucking a dick driving a Cadillac.
But
the open road, cigar in your ass and a dick in your mouth. It's called being American, baby.
Oh my god, I've never smoked a cigar, but I have to say I would be surprised if it were a hugely similar experience to sucking
a
dick.
You never smoked a cigar?
You can't inhale a dick, that's
never.
The main thing.
That's true, yeah. It's kind of frowned upon if you like
well,
just stick a cigar all the way back there.
It's all about, in both cases, it's all about flavour.
Yeah, and you've got to be careful, otherwise the end gets soggy.
Yeah, you've got to hold it in your mouth.
Yeah, you've got to cut the tip off.
Well, that's the
thing
with cigars, you have to circumcise them first. Whereas with penises, it's not necessarily...
Oh, like, seriously, no, we've got to stop this because we've had fucking... Intactivists yelling at us for most of this
week. Oh, Christ.
And so,
only smoke a circumcised cigar.
That's right. That's right. As God intended.
That is right. It is a mitzvah to smoke a circumcised cigar.
Like God looks down. Look. This is no fucking good. Get rid of it.
Yeah, none of these goyim cigars.
This is blocking the covenant. Again, as is my understanding.
Blocking the Covenant. That's another film.
Hey, Tony, you want to come block the Covenant with me?
We're going out down to Bing, we're blocking the Covenant. If you know what I mean. I got a guy coming over to do a thing. We're going to block the Covenant. Me and some guys are going down to sauna. We're going to block each other's covenants. You know what I'm saying?
So what do you do for work? I'm a covenant blocker.
Let's just say I work
in the covenant industry.
Let's just say I'm a prepuce. Okay.
I can't remember how this began. Yeah.
Something about the movie What Women Want.
Oh, yeah. No, I just sort of like the idea that, like, at no point does he ever hear a woman thinking about anything which isn't, like, dumb, boring, or about men.
No.
And, yeah, I think that's delightful. But, yeah, I did actually really enjoyed it as a film. Yeah, one of my big notes that I sent to both Marlo and Alice
Phoebe's
in public.
Big notes.
That's right.
Big note corner.
Is that it is very funny that Mel Gibson is both an anti-Semite and a homophobe, because his entire, and it's also very funny that he's supposed to be like the ultimate man's man. Mm. Because
he's Australian. It, what's more manly than that?
That is true.
There is a bit in this movie where he just goes, I'm gay, which I appreciate. It's not really justified about the plot. There's a bit where he goes, I'm gay. I would have pulled it as a drop if I'd thought to.
His entire vibe in this whole film is like fun, gay, Jewish uncle.
I'm in the
and I think that's
map.
Like, and I just think that's absolutely delightful. He's like, oh my God, Uncle Saul's coming to visit for the weekend. He's bringing his boyfriend. He's going to buy me some perfume. That's the vibe.
Yeah.
Where he buys his daughter the prom dress,
really,
and he's like going through the outfits.
He buys his fucking
outfits.
Lesbian daughter, she keeps like showing up and being like, "Oh yeah, like my boyfriend." It's like, are you kidding me? No, come on,
yeah,
come
her
on, sweetheart.
Yeah,
no,
looks a bit like a pirate. Yeah, no. He's like, got like a very weird.
I see you with your fucking Annie DeFranco notebook. Like that's just like there's absolutely no fucking way that child is supposed to want to fuck boys.
Meredith or what's her face CD.
Meredith Brooks.
She's got an Alanis Morissette CD. But like this movie also has some trans feels, right? Because he becomes able to hear women's thoughts by cross dressing.
Yeah. Yeah,
by like wearing stockings and nail polish, and then he gets trans.
He also says, "I know what it's like to be a woman."
I know what it's like to be a woman. He like infiltrates women's spaces, just like the person has been warning us about,
and
steals their ideas and stuff. Yeah, but the reason why this movie is such a time capsule is after he fucks Marissa Tomei and they have the best sex ever because he can read her mind.
Out where the
right?
pussy is. He's in her
apartment.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He shows her to the pussy. He like ditches her, and she shows up at his apartment really upset, and she can't figure out what's going on. And she says something like, "You really understand what it's like to be a woman. You act like a woman. You think like a woman." And then there's a beat, and you're just like, "Oh, this is a trans thing." And she's like, "Are you gay?
You take estradiol."
Yeah, pretty much. Like that. Fuck. There's a bit where he's like watching, like daytime TV, like fucking Jerry Springer or something. And there's a woman having like a heartfelt story, and he starts crying. And he's like, "What the fuck is happening to me?" It's a trans thing. There's
the
a
next
trans
scene
thing.
Is him going to the pussymonger.
That's right. Yeah,
that's right.
Show me.
That is right.
Show me a selection of your finest pussies.
Yeah, there's a fun.
Yeah,
there's a fun sort of dudes rock element to this, which is that they're at this advertising firm, and then it's like, oh god, women are buying stuff now. I guess we're gonna have to employ a woman. It's like, fuck.
For the first time ever,
we're gonna have to. I'm sorry, Nick. I've got to get a woman in. And the way he's like shrugging, he's like, I know, it's crazy. We gotta hire a woman, Nick. I'm sorry.
And yeah, this is the year 2000. It's not 1960.
Yeah, I know. Is it? Yeah, this is like it has the vibes of a film set in the 60s.
Yeah. But... Well, it has the vibes of Mad Men, but just like. You know, more charming and less likely to be watched by the most boring fucking people on earth.
And so his wife is on his ex-wife.
I fucking hate Mad Men.
Yeah.
Do you remember the period when everybody who watched Mad Men was putting like Brill cream in their hair?
It's called the gay mafia. It's like the mafia, but gay. It's the mafia, gay.
I mean, listen, if The Sopranos inspired, as it clearly did, a generation of men to become podcasters, then we still haven't seen the fallout from Mad Men yet.
Oh,
we're not over that little fucking cultural product, I think.
God, imagine a podcast, but where everyone just references Mad Men all the time instead of...
Yeah, I'm the Don Draper of my podcast.
Oh, but
bisexual Don Draper, is that anything?
But like, what people don't understand is like, Don Draper is like, is like not supposed to be good. He's supposed to be like an anti-hero, and like people just really misunderstand that about Mad Men. It's actually very multi-layered. No, it fucking isn't.
Sorry, are you directly quoting from Prince Harry there?
No, it fucking
in a recent interview.
You gotta check in on your Mad Men.
A lot of blokes, actually, they're quite mad. It was released under the title Mad Blokes in England.
Yeah. Entire Mad Men podcast killed in one horrifying headshot.
It's time to cancel Mad Men because it is a medical definition and that is ableist.
That is right. Yeah, I identify as a Mad Men.
I prefer if you called them maybe unsettling men or selfish men.
Mm. Yeah.
Troubling men. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Men with deranged characteristics. Yeah. I identify as Unabom X.
Men of unhinged experience.
Yeah, that's right.
Men of mad.
Mm, yeah, men of non-conventional behavior. Yeah. So,
odd men.
Mm, the odd man. So anyway, his ex-wife is away on a honeymoon with her new husband. He tries to snog her at her wedding, which is very funny.
Does. Which dudes, like this is really, like every single aspect, which is he's supposed to be like. A man's man. Like, yeah. Even when they have the voice of being like, yeah, Nick Marshall's a man's man. And then they just show this, like...
fucks men.
They just show this, like, bunch of, like immaculately, like, turned out, like, beautiful skin fellas, like, smoking cigars and, like, touching each other. And it's like, this is gay. This is the gayest thing I've ever seen.
Phoebe's doing the Leonardo DiCaprio pointing at the TV thing. Just like, hang on a minute.
Hang on.
Yeah. That's not a straight man at all.
But it is
when they're talking about the man's man thing, they just introduce like a man's man who is not Nick Marshall, who is just wearing a leather jacket and smoking a cigar while his guy friends are like being like, cool.
This guy's cool. Yeah, everything that he does that's supposed to be like really like man's manish is just like is sort of quite like kind of fumbling and quite sweet. And like while we're on the gay Jewish uncle stuff,
Phoebe's gay Jewish uncle corner.
Look, all right, there is a lot of possible content for Phoebe's gay Jewish uncle corner. All right, I'm just warning you right there. Also, Jewish uncles a bit of a theme of this podcast. They're a very important figure in my culture. The spectral figure of the uncle.
An important figure in every culture, really.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And I suppose it figures that in Jewish culture they would tend to be Jewish.
Yeah, my culture is based around the depredation of the uncle. We do not respect uncles.
We revere uncles in British culture. Uncles, they get you drunk underage. Drunkles. You know, they make inappropriate comments at Christmas. Kind of things you love as like a child.
The Jewish uncle doesn't.
Jewish uncle doesn't do that. Yeah, I'm talking about the Anglo uncle here.
Anglo uncle. I think they're a different breed. The Jewish uncle doesn't make inappropriate comments. The Jewish uncle just has a network of contacts that he's like ready to just produce at a moment's notice. And to the Jewish uncle, this doesn't mean that all Jewish uncles are well connected. It just to them, a contact is somebody who they
Phoebe
have...
accidentally unraveling a conspiracy of Jewish uncles.
Look, I will never betray the Jewish uncle network.
Well, the anti-Semites got wrong that it's the Jewish uncles specifically. Everyone else is cut out.
Yeah, it's entirely an uncle, nephew, or niece relationship.
Look, everybody's someone's nephew, all right?
So there's a bit when he is dance and he is like he plays himself some Frank Sinatra.
He
gets given the box.
He's like, I need to man up by
like,
listening to Frank
like,
Sinatra.
This whole thing is this woman is like being brought in to be like, okay, so it's time to like respect women as consumers, and here is how you respect them as consumers.
Take home this pussy cream.
That literally the only thing they're interested in is fucking lipstick. Yeah. So we're gonna give you this pink box of like girl shit to look at. And when he's thinking about it, he decides that he's gonna do a little dance routine on his own with like the kind of with like some hat moves.
Yeah, but then he's like, I need gayer music for this.
Yeah.
So he's like, so his 15-year-old daughter's staying with him. So he's like, right, I'm gonna go through her stuff. She's pretty gay. So let's look through her stuff and see. And then he finds a What Alice identified as an Alanis Morissette CD, but I believe it's a Meredith What's-Face who sounds exactly like Alanis Morissette. Because it's the song I'm a Bitch, I'm a Lover, isn't it?
Meredith Brooks does not sound like Alanis Morissette. I will not fucking stand for that.
I'm afraid she does.
No, she does not.
It's already been proven by the fact that Alice misidentified it as Alanis Morissette.
No, that's just Alice being young.
Now I'm paranoid that me not being able to tell Meredith Brooks and Alanis Morissette apart is like male socialization. Yo, do I misidentify Meredith Brooks like a man?
That's real AGP shit, Alice. You know,
No.
I appreciate that Meredith Brooks's stylings are very much like inspired by particularly mid-90s Morissette, but that it's.
Look, that the famous Meredith Brooks song "I'm a Bitch, I'm a Lover" could just plausibly be an Alanis Morissette song.
Maybe a latter period Alanis Morissette song, but not a Jagged Little Pill Morissette song.
This is also because all pop music is written by like one Swedish man, and always has been, and they just shop the songs around.
And just sometimes he's Italian. That's the only. I don't know what that is. What's going on there?
Just being very annoyed that I insulted singer-songwriters.
She's Alanis very protective. Morissette writes her own songs.
So anyway, he puts on Meredith Brooks and he has a little dance. He puts on
Tori Amos.
He sticks on The Cause and
on Bewitched.
There is a Bewitched song.
I know.
So he sticks on Atomic Kitten and he begins While he's listening to the musical stylings of the Sugar Babes, he begins to put on...
Well, I will punch you in the throat. Don't think I won't do that.
right, so he's put on Joni Mitchell, right? And he's got... And he's putting on... He's putting on the...
Put on PJ
he's
Harvey.
He's waxing his legs. He's putting on lipstick. He's putting on the tights, whatever. And then he's blow-drying his hair because he's put the volumizing...
Looks like a real brick, by the way.
Real brick, this guy.
Kind of clocky. Yeah. Sorry.
He needs what he's just starting out on his trans journey, to be fair. And then he falls over on all these like little balls that he spilled on the floor.
Yeah, what are those?
Some sort of beads.
He's just got a jar of balls.
Women just love balls.
balls. I mean, as we said at the start of the episode, there will be no double entendre.
No, these are only single entendre. These are literally balls.
They're sort of supposed to be oval,
aren't they? They're not really.
Sorry?
They're not spherical in shape, balls.
Aren't they?
No, literal balls are, but men's balls are not.
It's very, very transmisogynist of you to say men's balls.
Are they? Trans women's
balls, completely different shape, actually.
That's true, yeah. Square.
That's right.
I suppose they are. I don't know why.
They're more of a sort of rugby ball.
I don't know why I made a kind of gesture as if to kind of like remind myself of that.
Like what feeling balls was like. You were doing sort of Don Corleone kind of facial expression.
Yeah, you come to me on the day of my daughter's wedding.
The day of my son's castration with a request. And you know that I must grant this request.
Spill a bunch of balls all over my floor.
Would you care to join me in a circumcised cigar? We'll have no blocking of the covenant here.
They're quite satisfying.
Balls.
Yeah.
Balls. Oh, how so?
I mean, you know.
I will say this has not been my personal experience, but.
Nor mine, and I'm a cis man.
Like, just to kind of sort of roll around your palm.
As a ball owner, you don't really get
you're
that.
You're thinking
experience.
Benoit balls. Hmm.
It's only something you can have as a woman. Do you know what's actually here's a deep cut for me, and I don't know if Alice feels the same. Mm. But when a woman,
I meant bowding balls, different kind of balls.
I know what you mean.
If I touch my balls, I get nothing from it. If a woman touches my balls, it's quite nice. Mm. It's an entirely different sensation.
That is true. I'll concede that one.
The same.
Yeah.
If like the difference between someone touching your pussy and you touching it yourself.
No, it's not the same. Because if I masturbate, that still feels good. But if I touch my balls, it does
nothing.
Hold on.
Listen, we're going to have to get back to me after surgery and I will give you the definitive
peer-reviewed answer. We're going to need the Tiresias answer from Alice.
Alice's
perspective will actually be more informative because she will have the broader spectrum of knowledge.
Yeah, that's...
She'll come at the pussy from a new light. She will be a tabula rasa.
It'll be a new approach to the pussy.
Yeah.
Yo, it's more diagonal. Yeah.
Guy who likes shave pussy is like, yo, I love that tabula rasa. I like coming at the pussy in a state of nature.
I mean, this is already a classicist joke, but now I'm thinking about the English art critic who like was horrified by his wife on their wedding night because she has pubic hair and statues don't. Yeah, John Ruskin.
That was the only time he'd seen pussy before.
Yeah.
Oh, what an absolute joke. And they
basically never had sex for the whole of their married life because he was so horrified and disgusted by the idea of pussy hair.
Mm. And back then, they couldn't advertise waxing strips to a woman. All the men were waxing their pubes.
No.
And it's because John Ruskin could not hear women's thoughts. He was a man's man.
Yeah, that's all right. He was a real dude.
Man's man. Yeah, real dude.
Yeah, you're having sex with your wife? Pretty sus. Yeah, be a real dude who just looks at statues of women.
I like the idea of him just being like, oh my God, is it moldy?
Has this gone off?
It's like a little guy down here. Little fella.
Fat the guy.
I didn't come all the way up to your apartment just to be presented with this mouse.
That's right. Little chinchilla. Dust bath.
That's cute. Fucking chinchillas. Yeah. Oh my God.
Do not bath the pussy.
Alice, do you know how difficult a chinchilla is to look after? They're the biggest bunch of bullshit.
Is this a euphemism or not?
I was going to say, I was thinking, is this like a test? Yo, do I take care of a chinchilla like a dude?
The conversation we had when we were both very hungover.
No, I do remember, We had a long conversation about chinchillas and it was just like, it was like an instruction manual we found on the internet about like, if you get a chinchilla, all the things you'll have to do to look after them. And it was just like, you were like, oh, well, forget it then. I guess I just won't have a chinchilla. Yeah. Demanding.
Seriously, they're completely shit. Like,
much like a Times columnist's husband, the chinchilla is just like a fucking millstone around your neck.
And they have a Minecraft YouTube.
Oh, yeah. They're like, don't feed all it on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
It'll explode.
You can't get it wet. You can't get it hot. Yeah. You've got to buy it special chinchilla dust, even though it is from the desert, which is full of sand.
Yeah, they're like, you've got to let it out of the cage, but also you've got to be very careful that it doesn't escape.
Yeah. Also, you have to like when you're like training it and taming it and getting it to like you, you've got to give it lots of treats and make sure and never try to catch it, because once it associates you with someone or something that is going to try to catch you, it stands on its hind legs and pisses in your face.
Yeah.
And
lots of Berghain guys are very into chinchillas.
And three times a week you've got to give it its special like soft silken chinchilla dust, because if you give it normal dust then that'll tear its skin and damage
its
fur.
All these different things you can't give it, like you can't give it too many vegetables or they'll get like sick or something. Like, yeah, and then
you've got to
keep
two chinchillas together because otherwise they'll like freak out.
But also initially you can't keep them in one cage or they'll kill each other.
Yeah.
The thing was like, as a treat you can give them raisins, and then it's like a long like asterisk. It's like, don't give them two raisins too often or they will stop seeing them as a treat.
Yeah, chinchillas are the biggest fucking dickheads.
So anyway, we're not getting a fucking chinchilla anymore. No. That's decided.
Yeah.
No
chinchillas. We're going to get fucking everything, as Mel Gibson found out.
A podcast pair of chinchillas.
Mm. Podcast by two chinchillas. That's the Mad Men podcast.
Yeah, podcast fan art of you as like chinchillas.
It's a podcast by two chinchillas. Draper, you've done it again.
What do people want?
It's a dust bath.
They want the dream.
Men want a pussy that's so dry it's dusty. Chinchilla.
To be fair though, chinchillas having dust baths is so cute.
A raisin as a treat.
It's
to watch on YouTube, but if you have to supply the dust yourself.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm not fucking dust factory.
I'm made of dust.
Why, your butler.
Your fucking dust butler. You'd be nothing without me.
I think that's the funniest thing you can say to any pet in any context.
Why don't you paste your own dust?
Just yeah. point it at a budgie and be like, you're nothing.
Leeching off my dust.
You're 17 years old now. It's time for you to start paying, like earning your keep, paying your way, buying your own dust.
The thing is, a man and his chinchilla can't be compelled to testify against each other. That's why. That's why you get one. They're complicit in all your crimes.
I took notes on this movie as I was watching it.
Please share your notes.
Shall I try and continue with the plot summary and then Alice? If
I mean, my notes are mostly things like Sarah Paulson exclamation mark.
This is what I was going to say.
She's not even on the fucking she's not even on the Wikipedia. But no. She's now quite famous, but she wasn't famous at the time.
The list of opening credits. Yeah. This is what I was going to say when we were talking about the film being a time capsule.
Sarah Paulson is low key a crush of mine, actually.
That doesn't surprise she's really me hot. Even yeah. slightly.
Of course it doesn't.
She is also gay, though,
Sarah
so,
Paulson's
you know,
kind of,
one of us has, yeah. has potential
kind
there.
She's a kind of, like, kind of glamorized Kristen Wiig, I think.
Kristen Wiig, inventor of the wig.
Yeah. It was right. originally called Wig with two eyes, but then they changed it because they thought people would
She was originally called Kristen Weave, and they changed it to Ellis Island.
Wig. Wig.
Yeah. She was originally called Kristen Weave. She invented the Nintendo.
This surname is... Yeah, it's the name. It's the sound of chinchilla, mate.
It pisses on you.
This is when we. find out that she's
wet,
called.
But it can get you.
She's
wet.
Called Kirsten. Is she Kirsten or Kristen?
Kirsten Wiig.
The point is, her surname is so distracting that we don't know what her first name is.
So it's this film is like a time capsule. It's extremely 2000. It's extremely pre 9/11. Because if you look really closely at a picture of the. Planes hitting the towers, you can actually see like Fast and the Furious movies like kind of sparking off within the clouds. Just a huge chinchilla just being like,
well, the irony is that 9/11 was like the set piece that the Fast and the Furious movies wish they'd done. They'd just be two cars slamming in, jumping out of a tower next door.
There's something that our mutual friend Matt Lubchansky told me once, which has stuck with me forever, which is that people don't remember that 9/11 basically took place in the 90s. And as a consequence, like, it took place in like lives that were extremely faddish and weird. And so one of the things that they mentioned was that they used to work for, I think, like the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, sorting through the refuse that had been left after 9/11. And they had a whole warehouse full of desktop aquariums.
Oh, my God. That's like...
Because people had those
Tamagotchi
in the 90s.
Chief. Book it.
Yeah, exactly.
Sand pits with, like, a tiny rake.
You got a little Zen garden.
Be melted into a Newton's cradle.
So many fucking Dilbert calendars died on 9/11.
The thing was in the rubble, the screaming of all the Furbies. Saying,
feed me. Oh, God, that's awful.
Found a bunch of Far Side compilations welded together.
A big New York firefighter going around with a sledgehammer finishing off all the Furbies. Like, it's the kind thing to do. They're suffering. They're in pain.
We had to euthanize your Tamagotchi.
Humanely destroyed Tamagotchi. I like how this podcast has moved on from mentioning Fritzl every episode to mentioning ISIS or 9/11 every episode.
Yeah, well, it's cultural progress, eh?
That's true. Fritzl's just less relevant.
I'm struggling to find a way to link. Yeah, I'm struggling to find a way to link Josef Fritzl to this movie. Maybe that
one.
He too was trying to steal the pussy in an apartment. It was just the apartment was in his basement.
I'm still just thinking about
1800 PCM Zone 3.
I'm still just thinking about the idea of like a giant chinchilla being responsible for 9/11.
Trying to get that basement pussy.
He's very happy to repair things though.
If anything, he does too many repairs.
Yeah, he does a bit too many, modifications.
So it's a time capsule. But it also exists out of time because both Sarah Paulson and Marissa Tomei, this is 20 years ago, and they both look exactly the fucking same as they do now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sarah Paulson looks a couple of years younger, not 20 years.
And like, when she first came on screen, I thought, oh, she's going to be a much bigger part of this movie than she is, because that's Sarah Paulson, and she doesn't look like young Sarah Paulson. She looks like she fucking does American Horror.
Marissa Tomei looks like Aunt May, Marissa Tomei, and because there's this really weird period of time when Marissa Tomei...
Women start aging.
This is what's interesting.
Well, they were too busy shopping.
Marissa Tomei, and there's a 5-year period where she goes from
Phoebe's Phrenology Corner.
She goes from the second most beautiful woman in the world to still the second most beautiful woman in the world, but like second most beautiful woman in the world, MILF edition. And then she just doesn't age from that. So she goes from being this like absolutely like just transcendent, glorious like 22-year-old to being an extremely beautiful 45-year-old in 5 years, and then has just stayed at that kind of aspect for the last 20 years.
DM all of us, Marissa Tomei. Join our group DM.
There is an episode of Seinfeld where George goes on a date with Marissa Tomei and blows it.
I hate to see that.
And it's all about how he loves Marissa Tomei and how she's his ideal woman. And he turns out to be her ideal man, and he still blows it.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Just loves bald, short men. Because Sarah Paulson, her character, her whole thing is that she went to Harvard or Yale, and is like, and she's basically taken a job getting coffee for Mel Gibson in the hopes that that's going to translate into like a copywriting gig. And the main bit of character exposition about her is that, first of all, she's an annoying Ivy League grad, and second of all, that she has a boyfriend in Israel who she talks to on the work phone.
Yeah.
Shows up towards the end of the film, and the only thing you see is him giving Mel Gibson a yarmulke. And Mel Gibson going,
which has aged so well.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, this is before certain incidents. 9/11. So maybe it was 9/11 that sent Mel Gibson insane. But there's also, there's some, I kind of want to talk about Sarah Paulson's relationship with her boyfriend, who is in Israel, and he's in Israel being a writer, and she's like, well, you can be a writer anywhere, but if I want to work in advertising, I need to be in Chicago, which is bizarre.
No,
it's a bizarre,
untrue.
Bizarre
Because at this
argument.
Point in the film, I still think they're in New York, so I'm like,
fine.
Yeah.
Then you're maybe going about it the wrong way.
I told you before, I advertised deep dish pizza.
But then later on...
She's Jerry Seinfeld.
Later on, she says, so I said this to him, and her friend says, so what did he say? And she says, oh, I don't know, it was in Hebrew. And it's like, are we supposed to think that she literally doesn't understand what this man says to her ever?
I think the idea is that he had like made an annoyed aside in Hebrew in their conversation.
Yeah, he's speaking English to her most of the time.
I understood that as like, she just literally just doesn't understand what this guy says ever.
Yeah, I'm in a relationship with this beautiful himbo who I cannot understand a word of what he says. I'm moving on Tarzan principles here. I just extend stuff to him and hope he likes it.
Doesn't that sound ideal?
My parents, when they lived in Hong Kong, were friends with a British guy who lived out there who was married to a Cantonese woman who spoke no English and he spoke no Chinese. They had two children.
I am posting the eye emoji.
How weird is that?
That's concerning.
They had two children. How do they communicate?
Well, I guess at the point where, because the children, I think by the time my parents knew them, were about like 10-ish, around that. So they could then translate, because they obviously spoke both.
How do they communicate?
You're just like, we've got to have a kid, so in 10 years' time, can understand each other. Like
they both spoke Esperanto.
Some simultaneous interpreters.
Google, Yeah, Google Translate hasn't been invented yet. We have to have sex. Look,
we went
have
down
a
to the
That's how you get women to fuck you. You're like, listen, if you want me to understand what you're saying, we're going to have a kid so they can translate.
We went down to the UN to see if they had any spare interpreters, and they said no. So we're going to have a kid. Yeah.
You're going to have to make your own.
That is actually where United the UN Nations gets their simultaneous interpreters.
Well, all of the diplomats have to, like, fuck each other.
That's what I'm saying.
That's how you come to an understanding. It's like ancient Greece.
They got, like...
Those are the founding principles.
In the UN, they've got a special maternity ward back there. They've got a kind of... It's like a kind of panda breeding facility.
Let me tell you something about the UN. My name's Ban Ki-moon. I'm from the gay mafia. We run the UN. You think they're the UN, you're not. You're at the butter bing.
Is Ban Ki-moon still the UN Secretary General?
I don't think so. He's the last one I remember.
Last one.
Who is the UN Secretary General?
Was he before Ban
Ki-moon? He was before. Yeah, that was a
while
before,
ago, yeah. UN Secretary General. Antonio Gutierrez.
The present is such a horrible place, so I like to live in the past when Kofi Annan is a...
Antonio Gutierrez is a minor character in this film's cast list ass name.
You should look him up. He's got a thing. He's got a look going on, which I'm not sure I can quite describe. Right, but on, me, Antonio Gutierrez.
I'll be Jamie and pull this up for us.
I quite like the idea of like a trad guy who's the limits of their tradness
it's
is
offering
just...
me Antonio Gutierrez photography.
No, it's a Gutierrez.
Gutierrez.
Yeah, he's Portuguese.
He's got the same birthday as me.
Oh.
30th of April. There you go.
It's Phoebe.
A Taurus king.
Oh, wow. he does have it. It is a bit of an energy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. He's got a bit of a vibe.
His Excellency. That's what they call them, is it?
Oh, he's a Secretary General of the Socialist Party.
Mm. Prime Minister of Portugal from 1995 to 2002. During 9/11. And during the making and release of this film.
How many Portuguese people died on 9/11?
What's under other activities?
Probably, probably having a sleep.
Oh, boy.
Other activities.
Oh boy. What's
that? Hang on. Under tenure. Up. Up. Down. 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 Oh, this must be fascinating.
Other activities. Oh, he's the chairman of the Honorary Advisory Council of the Dag Hammarskjöld Fund for journalists. Damn, when she bust out Dag Hammarskjöld.
He's a member of something called, and I shit you not, the International Gender Champions.
Oh my God.
I will be awaiting my membership
invitation.
Member of
the Leadership Council of the Clean Cooking Alliance. Why does that sound like a TERF thing?
It also...
The Calouste Gulbenkian Foundation.
Says, member of the Vision Award jury of the Champalimo Foundation.
This is just nonsense. All of these are fronts. All of these are money laundering things.
Foundation.
International Gender Champion sounds like something they like made up to keep a famous person's child happy. That's like...
I mean, I am changing my screen name on Twitter
Club
now.
Club of Madrid. What the fuck is the Club of Madrid? An independent
to
non-profit
democracy.
I think it's called like Atletico.
Yeah, they've just merged the two, and its president is called Danilo Turk. Well,
something about the idea of a non-profit organization created to promote democracy that always sounds like sort of troublingly euphemistic.
CIA.
Yeah,
it was created to promote the killing of JFK. That's what that was for.
Yeah, right. The limits of their trap.
Legally, of course, we cannot say.
Legally.
No. Legally, we do
not
know.
No, because they were gay with JFK first, so we can't implicate
the
him.
The limits of this guy that I've just invented, to go back to what I was saying like 5 minutes ago.
Right.
The limits of this guy's trad nostalgia is that they only recognize former general secretaries of the UN. So they they don't want to go. They don't want to go.
Don't remember what we were talking about.
They don't want to go back to like the architecture of Rome. They don't want to go back to like the kind of the social mores of the 1950s. Mm. All they want to do is go back to
bring
a time when
Kofi
Annan
feel like pure shit. Just want him back.
Yeah,
that is right. okay, so basically the point of the plot we were in was that he's putting on all the lady stuff, and he slips on the lady balls. That they have, that women have, the lady balls. And then Yeah, again, and then he falls into the bath with the hairdryer and electrocutes himself, upon which he has the superpower to understand broads. He hears what the broads are thinking.
I can hear the broads.
Yeah, and then, and what's funny about this movie is that initially this drives him insane. I think most, I said this to Phoebe, I think most men in this situation would be at least initially intrigued by this, but he is immediately repulsed by it. He's like, I don't want to know what broads think. Why would I? Ah, he's like constantly assaulted by the thoughts of women. He's just like, he spends the next 10 minutes of the movie just like kind of leaping in horror every time a woman thinks something near him, which I do respect.
He also tries to,
it's haram.
He also tries to use the thoughts of women to like come up with good pitches, but it turns out that he's actually just like being intrusive. Like, because this is the thing, it's not about him just being able to hear women, it's about him like developing an empathic response to what women are thinking, because he thinks that he can just start kind of like rummaging through their minds and using what they say to come up with pitches. But he's actually got to like get involved with women on a kind of more personal level. And I got to tell you, it turns him into the most annoying fucking person. Like, if like some if like some guy who I worked with was all like, yeah, so tell him that either you're interesting or you're not, and trust me, he's not going to say that you're not interesting.
Look, you Phoebe, deserve, just at me next time.
You
right?
deserve you deserve better than this. I'd just be like,
no, I don't. First of all, don't like, bullshit me.
I'd just be like, look, all right, I'm sorry. Yeah. I am never going to fuck you. I don't know what this kind of, what this bullshit, like, oh yeah, like, I'm just.
He lurches just, from like
he's got the entire vibe of a reply guy who like every time a woman says like describes like some horrible experience with a man online and he turns up and just goes, oh, for fuck's sake, I apologize for my gender. That is the vibe of Mel Gibson.
You reckon first, that's like a stolen land acknowledgement. Like, first of all, just apologize for my gender up the top.
But like the vibe they're going for here is, I guess, that he's one of the girls, but he goes too far in that direction.
He's eating a salad while he has this conversation, which I love as a detail.
He's eating salads. And it's like he's talking to these women the way women only talk to each other drunk in nightclub bathrooms.
Yeah, that's right.
But also he looks and sounds like
so long in the bathroom because there's salad in there.
No. You come here. Look, I don't
you are beautiful,
I don't know
you're amazing.
But you are the most beautiful, special, perfect queen, and you deserve everything.
And she's like, thank you very much.
Everything. And instead of being like, this is fucking weird. Like fuck off. Like it just like all it reminded me of was like a couple of years ago. I was talking to this guy on Hinge. And
he was Mel Gibson.
Well, I assume Mel Gibson's on Raya.
Oh yeah, maybe.
Anyway. So I was talking to this guy on Hinge and he like suggested meeting, and he was like, so like where do you live? I'll like come meet you somewhere near there. And I said, well, I don't tell men on dating apps where I live because it just, that doesn't seem very wise.
It's sensible.
And he was like, what? Why not? And I was like, because of like the potential of being stalked and raped or murdered. And he just went, oh yeah, of course, like, oh man, just like really sorry for the patriarchy and that.
What a bummer.
And I was like, are you fucking kidding? Like literally my pussy slammed shut. I was just like, no, absolutely not.
Wide open before that. Like, you heard it from the other side of the apartment, like, slamming shut.
Like, it wasn't wide open, but it was willing to be persuaded.
It was a jar.
It was
there was a crack in the pussy. It was just,
like, it was, you know, when you're like, when you're trying to work out if the bin men are coming, and so you like kind of hook your finger, like kind of round the blind, and you kind of peer out, so you're not like, it was like that.
Yeah,
it was just like trying to kind of peer, but without actually looking. And then it just like, no, absolutely not. This is like
one of those doors in a London rented flat that doesn't quite close properly.
This
you have to
like,
really put your shoulder into
it. This shit dries you out like unsuitable dust for
like
chinchillas.
A dust bath, yeah. My pussy is a chinchilla. You cannot get it wet. It's not allowed. Otherwise, it'll cause all sorts of problems.
Yeah, for this guy. So, yeah. So, all of this kind of, like, what women want is a man who behaves like a woman. It isn't. I can confirm that it fucking isn't.
Now I've just had a flashback to a girl who told me that she was a little bit self-conscious because a guy once told her that her pussy gets, quote-unquote, too wet.
My ex said this about his ex.
What, the pussy is too wet?
Her pussy was too wet,
that,
yeah.
Her pussy got too wet. So that, I hope they don't. I hope the pussy monger doesn't give me like a pussy that's inclement pussy,
a humid pussy.
You don't want them to give you like a British pussy where there's just too much fucking rainfall.
Yeah. My pussy's got black mold.
Got a whole cloud system up there. Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, it's like temperate
got
but
rising
drizzly
damp. Yeah.
What's the
climate?
Yeah,
he's complaining about it because he said there wasn't like enough friction. There wasn't enough friction. And I was a bit like, why are you telling me this? I don't want to know this.
And he's like, whereas you, Phoebe, you have the perfect amount of friction in the purse. All right.
I don't want to blow my own trumpet.
Yeah. So to speak.
But we all know that I am packing excellent material, so...
Packing excellent material. Yeah. His excellent materials. That's what First Foreman was about. All those pics, it's just about pussy. That's
and the spyglass, come on.
Yeah. We all know where ladies keep their amber spyglass, don't we, lads? That's right.
In the apartment.
Yeah. That is right. Yeah, the Ministry of Pussy trying to hunt it all down.
Coming up to an hour and a half in.
Yeah, we're about 20 minutes into the film. Right, let's just sort of skip through because there's like a long... Basically, he then goes to see his old psychiatrist who was like his marriage counsellor with his ex-wife who is not thrilled that he's turned up.
Who is Bette Midler.
He knows. Oh, fuck, I didn't clock that. Mm. Yeah, I guess that was Bette Midler. She initially doesn't believe him.
Who
but
also
then,
shows up in an episode of Seinfeld.
He sufficiently reads her thoughts that she then makes this amazing, like, literally 3-second 180 degree turn from get out of my office to that you are fascinating and I must study you. And also...
She also smokes, like, a joint in order to get there. She smokes that shit that kills a chinchilla.
Honking on that booth that killed Diana. And so she then is like, no, you should use this ability to get pussy.
Did you know that Bette Midler recorded the original version of Smoke Two Joints?
smoke, weed. That was a Bette Midler original.
As was because I got high. Yeah.
Mm.
Bob Marley, same stoned initials. Ever noticed that? Interesting.
Right.
Ever seen them in the same room together? I don't think so.
That's so this whole thing wide
then
open.
Basically that then we get this, it's sort of like the act two shit, which is Nick having his like feminine awakening, where we get the scene with the fucking the salad, the girls chat. We get all the women in the office now love him because he's so attentive to the things that they think.
But it's interesting though, isn't it, because like Nancy Myers, who directed this film, is a woman. Like little sidebar here.
Allegedly
little sidebar here.
It's not.
I fucking love
how, just assume my director.
I love how Nancy Myers routinely casts leading ladies who are just like hotter versions of her. Like she and Helen Hunt look a lot like each other.
Oh.
And I think that's delightful. It's a bit of, you know, self-insertion.
Mm.
But like it's such a dishonest picture.
Self-insertion into your excellent materials.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's such a dishonest picture of the girls' chat. Which is literally just like...
We love the girls' chat.
Which is literally just like, the can anyone chat like come over here and like help me dislodge a stuck tampon? Like, that's the girls' chat. Like the girls' chat is like the
women's
vilest
version of a first responder.
Yeah.
My girls' chat experience has been checking a selfie to make sure that you don't have anything in your teeth, and like a lot of talking about IBS.
Mm. Like it's all
women
like
shitting
and hogs. Like that's girls' chat. Yeah. Like it's not any of this kind of like, oh, do you think he likes me? Because like there is that in girls' chat, but that's like that's a different kind of girls' chat. That's when the girls give the other girls the bad advice and say, no, he definitely likes you, when he clearly doesn't.
Yeah. And that's the advice that gets me in trouble.
I don't know why I've sort of strayed. I don't know why I've strayed into this kind of "Am I right, ladies?" kind of register. Mm. But please ignore it because I don't know where it's come from. We've been recording a lot this afternoon.
We have. And so then the key sort of plot element of the film here is that he basically uses his newfound ability to kind of steal Darcy's ideas and pass them off as his own. They're sort of working together on this ad campaign for Nike, which they land, which is a huge client, it's a huge fanfare thing. During which there's a sort of subplot where his daughter is going to the prom with her 18-year-old boyfriend, which he doesn't like because nonce. And then...
Yeah, he looks like a nonce. Yeah. He dresses like a nonce. He talks like a nonce.
He's really familiar, that guy. I couldn't work out where I knew him from.
Do you know what? Do you know who I think he might be? I think he might be the guy who played fucking Boris in GoldenEye. Looked a bit like him.
That's a deep cut.
Yeah. I'm invincible.
I don't think it's him.
Yeah. Why was that guy always on the dark web, eh? Nonce. There you go. Boris in GoldenEye is nonce coded.
That's what GoldenEye was about.
Yeah, using a satellite to download all the child pornography
in the
world.
You know what GoldenEye is?
Now look here, 007.
Got to get both of you on Kill James Bond for GoldenEye and just reverse this.
All of the...
Reverse the polarity of this movie corner.
Trying to download all the world's child pornography so that we won't have any. If they do that, the London Stock Exchange will crash. Because everyone will be too busy looking for child pornography to run it. Your mission.
I could feel that joke getting a bit uneven in the middle and then just like balancing
now through. Now 007. Looks like an ordinary child, yes? giving him just like a bad scarecrow of a child, but like you have to use this to lure them. It's got a camera in it. Anyway, pull its hand twice and it explodes. Right. So anyway, and then
like an exploding honey trap. Torpedoes.
The greatest weapon in the nonce hunter's arsenal. the explosive is triggered when it's first given a wine gum. He takes his daughter to buy a prom dress. He eventually ends up here, like, there's this whole, and then the film comes to this sort of denouement where he discovers that his boss has fired Darcy and promoted him, and he's like, no! And then also he discovers that there's like this girl, there's like the filing girl who throughout the film is like super depressed, and he's hearing her depressed thoughts.
Oh, yeah, also, and he works out that she's gonna Judy kill herself. Greer also looks exactly the same now as she does 20 years ago.
It's really funny in this film that all of her like internal dialogue is, well, guess I'll kill myself. And he's like, I am not alarmed by this, but I do think she's quite funny. Which has been my experience with men and making jokes about my mental health.
Yeah, to be fair. So. I mean, it would be a fair description of you, Alice.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, Alice. It's
like, well, might as well kill myself. Yeah. And everyone's like, ah, fantastic.
Exactly. And then so he runs out on this kind of like, he's got this kind of like a Sophie's Choice type situation going on where he has to go and stop the girl killing herself, but he also has to go and like make up with the love of his life, Helen Hunt. And he also has to, his daughter is at the prom crying. Over the something to do with the boyfriend.
It seems like a fairly simple like order of operations. You do the suicide prevention first, then the prom thing, then the Helen Hunt.
Like, Helen Hunt is always like, third in the order of operations. Like, it's like bid mass.
Like presumably you can't like it's a kind of like sort of trifecta operation.
Bid mash with H at the end for Helen Hunt. You do all everything else first.
But like because presumably like if things go the way he hopes, he'll like end up spending the night with Helen Hunt. He can't like go and like snog Helen Hunt and then be like, right, I've got to go and prevent Judy Greer from committing suicide.
Yeah, and have a bonding moment with my daughter.
You're so hot that I came to you first before stopping this woman from padlocking herself in the suitcase and shooting herself in the back of the head four times. Yeah, she really filed the wrong Russian file.
He hears his daughter thinking, thinking that she has like promised to have sex with her nonce boyfriend, Cameron.
Mm. Yeah.
And he is horrified.
And nonce is their word, is their bond.
Well, he's horrified because, they can't do any written contracts because it's all illegal. So they've got to do spoke.
Yeah.
So they've got, it's to like do, pirates. Got to do oral contracts.
You have to parlay with the nonces. he also.
It's like the mafia. You've got to have like a nonce commission that enforces
this
stuff.
And he's horrified because, as far as he's concerned, his daughter is a lesbian.
Yeah. And it's when Mel Gibson gets back to his apartment and discovers that his daughter's pussy isn't there. That's when he's really concerned.
Because she's packed it up. She's put it in a little clutch bag.
That's right. Taking it with her.
That's what the clutch bag is for. Mm. It's like it's big enough to store your phone and your pussy, and that's it.
If you have sex with a woman and she's already wearing her pussy, it wasn't your idea. You think women go out in their day to day life wearing their pussy? Come on. Don't be naive.
There is a very good, oh my god, what's her name? That stand up comedian, Wanda something. Sykes.
I wanted to say WandaVision there.
Yeah.
Just to annoy everyone.
Yeah, that's right. Is WandaVision supposed to be a pun on One Division?
Well, it's a portmanteau.
No, I know she's called Wanda and he's called Vision, which, by the way, is the most annoying fucking thing in the world. Do you remember a couple of months ago when everyone was going around acting like what is love but grief, but what is grief but love persevering, and acting like that was like,
yeah, I'm still
that
doing
good,
that.
Yeah.
Good line.
What is podcasting but a conversation persevering
for hours
through bits?
So, like, I know this is not what we're supposed to be talking about, but I've just been reminded of it, and now I'm mad because.
No, put it in.
Put it into my excellent materials.
Like, if you
fucking bite your tongue, Milo.
If you unpack this, like, everyone's sort of saying, like, oh god, that just really got me right in the feels, or whatever it is that the biggest idiots in the world are saying. Yeah.
This one got me right in the pussy.
Oh god,
that's the film what women want. If we had to give it a review, it got us all right in the pussy.
But if you like unpack it, like even like for even a second,
take it out of the clutch bag,
are they suggesting that if you love somebody and they die, you're just like, oh okay, well there you go. I no longer love them because they're dead. It's such a banal observation. I don't even think it's a new observation.
Anyway,
just getting into a Lit Crit Corner over here.
Yeah, we've had a lot of Phoebe's Lit Crit Corner.
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 There's a Wanda Sykes bit about how cis women's lives would be much easier if you could remove your pussy and if you could just leave it at home. You could go out, you could go and walk around cities at night, and you could go for a run in the woods in the morning, and you just basically be living a completely different life as long as you could leave your pussy at home. And we've unwittingly stumbled across that bit. It's a good bit.
Yeah. And so the end of the film is he prevents the woman from killing herself. He discovers that he can no longer hear women because he's struck by lightning.
He prevents her from killing herself by giving her a job as a copywriter.
And breaking into her apartment.
And like,
employ women. Pay women.
I don't think that it is particularly good to suggest that the way of making anyone feel better about themselves is through the kind of mechanisms of boss pleasing. I don't think that's good.
Mm.
But also have you ever,
what does the boss baby want?
Have you ever met a joyous copywriter?
Joyous.
It's not a very joyful job. I'll concede that
you
much.
Don't,
yeah.
Like,
joyous copywriter sounds like Cockney rhyming slang for something.
Oh, me old joyous copywriter.
It's what
calling the pussy my joyous copywriter.
Lighter.
Mm. Oh, give us get
give us your joyous.
Us your joyous.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's all right.
Bring us back to the box of matches.
Yeah. I think that was on the other episode.
Was, yeah.
Yeah. That we recorded today.
Mm.
I just said, like, I know you're talking about anyway, because I'm being polite.
Alice,
I'm a very good guest.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Yeah, have you ever met a joyous copywriter? Like, the idea...
Of queen.
The idea that, like, she is, like, she is so, like, desolate that she's, like, in a state of suicidal depression, and the only thing that will cure her is giving her a job as a fucking copywriter. Yeah. No, give her some money and say she doesn't have to work at all.
I just want to write a line like, pussy, swap it between the legs. Women, you're a woman. Buy this lipstick.
Broads.
Yeah, because well, also the fucking ad campaign that they do for Nike is like running. Broads can do it. And then the Nike executives are like, oh my God, it's amazing.
No, I actually,
my pussy is wide open.
How much did Nike pay
this
to
is
be
the,
in
this
movie,
the thing,
by the
because,
way?
Like, yeah, they actually have to come up with a kind of relatively decent campaign strategy.
And then the whole thing is like, Nike are like the wokest company in the world. Like, they are so fucking women. Like, you've got to really understand women if you want to pitch to Nike.
Unless they happen to be women in Bangladesh.
Yeah, that's right. That is right. These shoes were made by women who were paid less than the minimum wage.
Working in appalling conditions in a sweatshop.
But weighed by women nonetheless.
I'd prefer it if you didn't use the sweatshop slur. Thank you.
People of sweat. Anyway, so then he eventually ends up at Helen Hunt's house after Via comforting the daughter, and he confesses everything about how he stole her ideas, and then he explains that he made sure that she got her job back.
Yeah,
by lobbying for her with the boss.
And again, she doesn't say, like, well, how did you steal my ideas? Like, how did you know?
Yeah, he doesn't elaborate.
About my ideas. And
no, she's just like, how did you do that? And he's like, I just did it.
Broads.
Yeah, he's like, you're not as smart as you think you are, broads.
Yeah, it's literally, his, like, the whole thing that he says there is something.
She presumably thinks he's been, like, going through a mail or something.
Well, like, presumably that what he's saying, what he's actually saying there is, you think your ideas are so special? No. Yeah. It's entirely possible that we could have come up with them independently because you're not that original a thinker, sweetheart. Let's fuck.
Yeah. Listen, I've got loads of your toenail clippings in my apartment.
Yeah, I couldn't find your pussy, so next best thing.
Next best thing. I'm making a sort of fleshlight out of the toenail clippings.
I don't know where you left it.
It takes a lot to get that reaction from Alice.
Yeah, you know, it took us an hour and 40 minutes to get here, but we got there in the end, and it was fleshlight made of toenail clippings.
I don't know
clippings.
Where you left it. Like, there is literally a hook on the wall for this exact purpose.
Fleshlight made of toenail clippings somehow manages to be both a psychologically and physically appalling object. Like, it has no utility.
Making a sound like desiccated coconut.
Yeah, no, don't. Oh, yeah, we don't like that at all.
But lots of things are both psychically and materially horrifying objects.
Yeah, true. A lot of things we mention on this podcast.
like you know, you can like go and see a model of the the bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima. That feels like a kind of psychically and materially.
Yeah, but it's not as bad as if it was made out of toenails.
Yeah, no, that's that true. They like that.
Or if you could fuck it, if it had like a fleshlight in it, that would be
model,
worse.
Yeah, the model of the bomb, I would say it's psychologically horrifying, but it isn't physically horrifying because it is only a model of a.
Sure.
Anyway,
so would a model of a fleshlight made of toenails be?
It's a model of a fleshlight made of toenails, but it's actually just made of the normal fleshlight material that's been textured to look like toenail clippings.
Now we're straying into Dali territory here.
signifier.
Yeah, most of us are simply looking at the fleshlight made of toenails on the wall of the cave.
You're just fucking the wall of the cave.
Some of us,
we're busting a nut in the realm of forms. You're just looking at perverted representations of women. I'm reading their faults.
Was that Baz John Berger?
I don't know anymore. Oh, we've been done so much podcasting. And then she's like, "Well, if all that's true, then I guess you're fired." And he's like, "Ah, this hasn't gone how I expect. But okay, I guess I am fired." He's respecting women's boundaries, and then she's like, "But I will still fuck you." She sort of does this like lol joke thing, but it's not like lol joke, you're not fired. It's like lol joke, you're still fired, but we can go out. It's like, well, I wouldn't really want to go out with someone who insisted that they were still going to fire
me. She doesn't want to sexually harass him.
Oh, do you think that's the bit? She's like, HR will have a field day.
There's a power imbalance now. Yeah.
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 Power differential.
She's very big on power dynamics. She's a Tumblr girl.
If someone showed up and said, yeah, I stole all your ideas at work and basically forced you out of your job, I would not be so keen to invite them into my apartment to invite them to see if they can find my pussy.
Yeah.
No, but she is.
To be fair,
Helen Hunt is a dumb bitch.
It seems like. Yeah.
In this film.
It doesn't seem like his agenda is really to get her fired, but rather his agenda is more just to get himself promoted. Mm. Because he sort of quite likes her almost immediately.
Yeah, he likes
her. Which again is weird because she's styled as like the antagonist, but also like there's an immediate.
But yeah, like at one point she's just like, oh yeah, everyone just says that I'm like the advertising industry's ball breaker. It's like, you've done nothing remotely ball breaking unless you are genuinely claiming that expecting men who work for a large advertising agency to write campaigns for lipstick is ball busting. Because.
No, she means literally. She does crush men.
That's fair enough,
and DM
gives them the pop.
Yeah. Where do you think I worked? The gay mafia? I quit there. The
like
work
an overripe
in advertising.
Lychee.
I wish balls had as hard an outer casing. Thank you, Phoebe. That would make them more structurally integral, I think.
Crushing the balls like a durian.
The smell. As a man, I think balls just they cause more problems than they solve, frankly.
What problems
tell
do
me
they
about
solve?
It.
None.
the pregnancy, I guess. If you want to get a woman pregnant, you kind of need balls, really.
Yeah, if you need an interpreter.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. You want to put an interpreter
problem
on order.
Solved. Thank
it's a bit
you
like
balls.
The Soviet Union. You can order a car, but it's just you got to think about it 10 years in advance.
How do you solve a problem like Korea?
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
Balls.
That's right.
I still think he's dead the whole time.
It's
a hallucination.
Women aren't real. I told you this. You're imagining it.
The broads aren't real. They can't hurt you.
There is a bit. There is a scene where he goes out trying to check whether he's lost the magic, and all he sees is dudes, which I appreciate. Oh, yeah. He's just wandering around New York like, I need a woman.
He's like, finally, the world I've been looking for, just dudes. None of this gay shit.
It's dudes only.
That's right. Dude world. Dude world. The dude matrix. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
I think we're done here.
Yeah. Right, final.
Thank you for having me on to, I'm checking my notes here, talk about the movie What Women Want.
How are we rating this movie? Out of broads,
we have to rate
out
it?
Of five, how many broads are we giving it?
I think 3 broads.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree, actually.
I enjoyed it, but it's extremely dumb and doesn't stand up to any kind of scrutiny. But no. I did like the gay Jewish uncle dance sequence. So
it's a vibey, it's a vibey film. Yeah. Sort of broadly speaking. For also for a film you expect to have terrible politics, the politics of the film aren't that bad.
No, it's supposed to be a specific.
They're just very.
It's supposed to be a very specific like send up of like the idea of like he's the guy, like he's a guy's guy, and it doesn't take that much for him to like turn into a relatively decent person. He's just like a very annoying relatively decent person.
Yeah,
I much prefer him when he's being the gay
he
uncle.
He thinks that's what women want. He's like, women, they're annoying. They want you to be annoying back to them. That's why they hang out with women. They like being annoyed. I don't know. I'm gay. I'm a guy's guy.
Thank you very much for joining us, Alice. That is right.
Absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thank you very much for...
Any time you need somebody to talk about storing the pussy in an apartment. I'm happy.
Alice, is there anything that you would like to plug to the listeners who've made it this far? The sort of Shackleton-like...
That's a dangerous question to ask me after immediately talking about pussy. Listen to Kill James Bond, the other podcast that I do. Listen to, well, There's Your Problem. Listen to Trash Future, the podcast that me and Milo do.
Alice and I have so much podcast cross-pollination. There's no podcast that Alice does that I have not also been on.
About the only link that we don't have yet is I don't do a podcast with Phoebe yet.
This will be the Pussy Storage podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. That's what it's going to be. Well, in that case, tune in for those. Follow Alice on Twitter. Thank you very much for being a $5 Patreon subscriber.
Yes, thank you very much indeed.
Patreon subscriber. This is the real tier. This is when you're in the apartment pussy tier. You're in Phoebe's excellent materials right now if you're at this tier. So we will see you very soon for another episode. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.